Wednesday evening at 7:30 is time for Here's a Pioneer. It's a weekly presentation of the Pioneer Cab Company, located across from the Nordale Hotel, and their telephone number, 24 hours a day, is East 10A. This week's Pioneer is from Council, Alaska, former postmaster there. His name is Fred DeRocher. Mr. DeRocher, I'm going to begin tonight by asking you about what you're doing in Fairbanks.
I'm just stopping here for a few days, waiting to get transportation to Valdez Creek.
I imagine, inasmuch as you spend most of your time out of town, that you enjoy a few days in town, meeting old friends and shopping around, attending to a little business. How about that?
Yes, I do. I have several acquaintances here, and I'm stopping with one of them right now.
I see.
Because I couldn't get a room in the town.
What's the name of your friend?
Arthur Johnson.
Arthur Johnson, huh? How long have you been in Alaska, Mr. DeRocher?
Been in Alaska 45 years.
Now, 45 years strikes me as being a mighty long time. I'm interested in knowing what was your home down there in the States.
Dover, Massachusetts.
Well, you must have been a young man at that time. What was it that gave the young man the idea of traveling all the way across the United States and then as far north as Alaska?
Well, there was a gold strike made in a place called the Klondike.
I've heard of the Klondike. Will you tell me more about the news that you picked up about the Klondike in those days?
Well, we picked up the same as everybody else, I guess. Different newspapers printed different stories from those that had come from there, and most people got excited, and of course I got a little excited, too.
But you know, being of this generation, I would have no way of knowing exactly what those newspapers said in those days. Did they really paint a brilliant picture of the strike in the Klondike?
Oh, yes, yes. They were piling gold up there like cordwood.
Like cordwood?
Yeah.
Uh-huh, and so you thought you'd like to have some more, too, and
thought I'd like to be in on it.
Uh-huh. And what was your destination? Did you intend to come to Skagway or Dawson, or where were you going to end up?
Well, I was bound for Seattle to begin with because I knew that that was the port of entry. That's where most people started from.
Mm-hmm.
So I come to Seattle.
Did you work around Seattle for a while?
I worked at for the Seattle Logging Company on Port Crescent, firing a donkey.
I suppose you had followed logging back home in Massachusetts?
I had never followed logging much, but I had done a lot of wood chopping.
Wood chopping, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then what was the name of the boat that carried you to Skagway?
I believe it was the Humboldt.
The old Humboldt.
The old Humboldt.
I've heard of that in connection with the stories of other early-day pioneers of Alaska. The Humboldt took you to Skagway. What was Skagway like in 1902?
Well, Skagway was quite a town in 1902.
It was really a big metropolis for Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And you traveled then from Skagway, I suppose, to Whitehorse, did you?
From Skagway to Whitehorse, we walked the White Pass and Yukon Railroad. It was completed at that time.
You walked the railroad. Well, what was your purpose in walking the railroad?
Well,
I think I would have hitched a ride.
There's no way of hitching a ride.
Uh-huh.
It would saved us a few dollars. We didn't have any more than the law allowed, but we thought we'd save a little by walking it. 110 miles, I believe, the actual distance.
Uh-huh. Who traveled with you?
A man by the name of A.J. Dayton. He's a druggist from Saginaw, Michigan, and a German by the name of Ernest Hinkelman. He's located now in Calgary, Canada, last I heard.
Now, this Hinkelman, I believe you've heard of him recently, haven't you? And he probably would be known to many of the old-time listeners in our audience tonight.
I haven't gotten any news from Hinkelman, but from A.J. Dayton, I read in the Alaska Weekly that he's located in Vancouver, B.C.
He's down in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
And perhaps following the same trade then.
Probably.
Uh-huh. All right. After you got to Whitehorse, how long did you stay there?
Stayed there, I think, about 4 or 5 days.
4 or 5 days, and then what mode of transportation did you choose to from Whitehorse to Dawson?
There were different ones on the way to Dawson at that time, and seven of us got together, bought a boat, and floated down the Yukon River.
Down the Yukon in a boat? Well,
yes.
I've heard that that can be a rather treacherous trip. What time of the year was it that you made that run?
It was in June. We arrived in Dawson the 22nd day of June, so it was probably took us 3 or 4 days to go down or something.
45 years ago next month, then.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Can you tell us something of the trip? Was it a big boat? How many people were with you? And
well, it wasn't no big boat. We had lots of room, though. It was big enough to hold 7 men.
Uh-huh.
And the only dangerous place that I could see was going down through Five Finger Rapids.
Mm.
come very near having one of those serious accidents there, like lots of others did before us.
I'd like to have a little more details about that trip.
Well, there was a German fellow, a heavy-set man, I never knew his name. He was steering the boat, and we take turns rowing, two of us. Well, there's one certain place where you go through there, and if you happen to hit it just right, you'll go through. If you don't hit it just right, why, you'll go down.
I suppose a lot of fellows did go down.
Yes, they did. All right. Well, anyway, when there's a thing like that going on, you know, everybody's starting in to tell him what to do. Go over a little farther.
Everybody's screaming instructions.
Swing over this way a little farther so we can hit that. Well, the old German got mad and slung his oar in the boat and said, take it down through yourself. A young Englishman there, he stepped up and took the oar and sat down, and he just paddled the boat, and we went right through in flying colors.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were lucky.
We were lucky, is right.
Uh-huh. Were there other difficulties along that water route from Whitehorse to Dawson besides the famous Five Finger Rapids?
Well, there's one place below they called Rink Rapids. The water just goes up and down, a little bubble. Mm-hmm. Big surf. You get in there, it's hard to get out.
I see.
It holds you there.
Did you have any trouble there?
No, not to speak of. We went pretty well to the edge of it.
About how long did it take you to get from Whitehorse to Dawson?
Well, now, I just don't remember the exact number of days.
Would it be a matter of days or weeks? Or?
No, no. Oh, no. Just a matter of a few days.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
I should think probably 5-6 days.
You know, by 1902, I can imagine that Dawson was really a growing and thriving community.
Yes, I'll say it was. Uh-huh. That is, there was, I believe, 12,000 people there at that time.
Didn't you believe it was a lot larger than you'd expected to find?
Oh, I had no idea about that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I found that it was quite a bustling town.
Mm-hmm. Where did you do your first mining in that locality then?
My first mining?
Yes.
I done it on Moose Creek, a tributary to the 40-mile River, which is about 60 miles from Dawson.
Uh-huh. I suppose you suddenly found out that there's a lot to know about mining.
I found that out, yes. Uh-huh.
And you've learned a lot about mining, I know, in the last 45 years or so. Perhaps you could make a comparison of how things were handled in mining in those days with the way things are done these days.
Well, the individual mining was handled practically the same way. There's no way of improving on that.
That's
so far as individual mining, yes, putting down your shaft and prospecting with your pan and making a rocker and testing the ground thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the way you'd have to do it now if you were going to mine by individual methods.
I see.
But with the new machinery and improved ways they have of mining, well, a lot of ground that you could work, you know, couldn't work to advantage. There's good money in it right now.
Mm-hmm. What are the principal means of mining now with improved equipment and other scientific aids?
Oh, well, dredging.
I see.
For instance?
How about the dredge now? When did the first dredge come into the North Country?
Well, I don't know just what year it was. I think it was either 1901 or 2. There was a dredge on the Moncrief ground on Bonanza Creek when I come there.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved it off a very few years afterwards and moved it down to Flat Creek on the Iditarod, or the Anoka, in that country.
I'll bet there were a lot of hard-bitten miners in those days who sort of snorted at the idea of trying to get gold out of the ground by scientific means.
Yes, well, they was all right enough, and because that northern country around there was all frozen ground, and people couldn't understand how they were going to dredge frozen ground. Well, they know now how to dredge frozen ground.
Well, how do they dredge
it? They thaw it by steam, or used to, and now they use the cold water process.
I can't quite understand how they can thaw the ground by cold water.
Well, we couldn't any of us understand it. I couldn't at the time that was first talked about, but they do, and they drive the points down, and instead of steam coming out through the points, it's water under pressure, cold water, from a ditch way up high.
Mm-hmm.
And they sure thaw the ground.
Well, Mr. DeRocher, I imagine then that with scientific methods improving and making the job more thorough, that these dredges and other equipment are going over the ground that has already been worked, perhaps in your early time. Isn't that true?
Yes, that's so.
Where is it being done principally?
Being done up in Dawson
you
right
mean
now.
They're working the tailings and other ground that has already been mined.
Yes, and they're thawing it by the cold water process.
Mm-hmm. Well, that seems to be a good indication for Alaska, and Once again, when economic changes are so that they can carry on work on an extensive scale, it would seem that there is plenty of gold dredging to be done here.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, turning aside from gold mining, how long did you mine in the Dawson vicinity, and then what was your second place to move
10 years. I was there from 1902 to 12.
And then where did you go?
I come down to Council.
Council, uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you've been in Council how long?
Been in Council ever since, since 1912. Mm-hmm. Council is 70 miles north of Nome.
I see. And you served at Council for a long time as postmaster, I
guess. Yes, I was postmaster there 13 years.
Mm-hmm. Is that a very busy sort of a job in a town like Council?
Well, no, it isn't now. There isn't much of a population there anymore. There wasn't at that time. Mm-hmm. Of course, there was more than there is now, but it never was. Since I've been there, it never was much of a town, and now it's way down
as
far as population's concerned, mm-hmm. but there's quite a bit doing there in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if communications have changed a great deal since you came to Council. When did you see your first airplane?
Well, I'm not positive, but somewhere along 25 or 6, around in that neighborhood, I should think.
I suppose you had heard them and seen them at a great distance.
I had seen them in the air a couple of times, but the first plane I see, Noel Ween come in there with it.
I saw Noel Ween on the street this morning.
You did?
One of Alaska's pioneer flyers, to be sure. What sort of an airplane did he have at that time?
Why, it was an open airplane, seated two people, I believe, pilot and one, or probably two, I'm not sure. But it was a very small plane compared to what I flew in here the other day from Nome.
I see, an open cockpit.
Open cockpit, is right.
Airplane, biplane.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Well, that pretty well covers your first experience with aviation. I'm wondering about the game situation in the vicinity of Council. Have you always been interested in hunting to any great extent?
No, I never made a practice of hunting much. I'd done a little trapping over there in the Norton Bay country when I was prospecting over there, but not to speak of, and I never followed it to try and make a living out of it.
Uh-huh. Are you retired now, or are you engaged in some mining activity?
No, I'm interested now in the Carlson ground on Valdez Creek, along with Clyde Glass. We have a small company, and we have a lease on that creek, and we're developing it now with a view to getting dredge on it.
Is this a recent experience with you, or is it something that you prospected many years ago, this Carlson ground?
No, I never was prospecting on that before.
Mm-hmm. How do things look over there?
Looking very good.
Uh-huh. Do you intend to really go into extensive operations?
Yes, we're going there this year to prospect again.
Uh-huh.
We have a drill, and they have worked on that creek for the last 40 or 45 years, I believe, the way I understand it, and there's an immense deposit there, and the only way it could be handled, I believe, is with big dredge.
I see. Then you believe that that's a good home location for a dredge. You could spend a lot of time working right there.
I certainly do.
Mm-hmm. A lot of water there?
All kinds of it.
Mm-hmm.
Practically unlimited.
I see. All right. Well, then, if you have no further comment, perhaps I could ask a question that's familiar on Here's a Pioneer. Have you really enjoyed to the fullest your 45 years in Alaska? Have you had a chance to get outside very often?
I went out in 41, the year that the Japs attacked at Pearl Harbor. That was my first trip out.
Mm-hmm.
33 years.
33 years in
Alaska. I've been out twice since.
Uh-huh. You feel that you've really enjoyed your life in Alaska. I'm sure of that, because you would have moved out earlier than this.
Oh, well, I wouldn't go outside to live permanently on a bet.
They couldn't sell it to you.
No, they couldn't sell it to me.
Uh-huh.
I'd miss these blizzards and snowstorms that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy them. I like
you
to sit in the house and listen to the radio and hear the snow hitting the window panes.
I've only been here a small percentage of the time that you've been here, Mr. DeRocher, but I think I know exactly what you're talking about. Well, friends, you've listened to an interview with Fred DeRocher from Council, Alaska. And as you know, this has been the program Here's a Pioneer, a weekly interview with one of Alaska's genuine old-timers, as brought to you by the Pioneer Cab Company, operated by Joe Coble. Remember, the Pioneer Cab Stand is located across from the Nordale Hotel, and their telephone number, 24 hours a day, is East 10A. Be with us again next Wednesday evening at 7:30 for Here's a Pioneer.
The program
This afternoon, or rather we should say this evening, brings to us here in KENI studios a man who is a part of Alaska. He is a part of Alaska because of what he has given Alaska. And we're going to ask you, Mr. Bugby, to just say what your name is and get the ball rolling on this show. And so if you would just tell the audience what your name is.
My name is Bugby, Lester Bugby.
And Mr. Bugby, we don't like to, the announcers around here don't like to carry on all the conversation. They like to hear the people who come here talk, do the talking. So I'm going to ask you, Mr. Bugby, a couple of questions to kind of get warmed up, you know. And then I'm going to see whether or not you can just go right ahead and tell the interesting story that you have to tell. And ladies and gentlemen, he really has an interesting story. Mr. Bugby is here facing me with, I should almost say, pounds of gold hanging on his shirt. Gold that he has taken from the hills and mountains of Alaska. Now, Mr. Bugby, are you originally from Alaska?
No, I was raised in Wyoming. Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And I come here when I was about 18 years old to Alaska in 1914. And I registered here in Anchorage in 1917 and went to the First World. Come back in 20. And since then, I've been outside of the territory twice.
What did you think about going outside?
Well, I was outside last winter. I was from New York City, clear into Frisco. I spent 3 months, and I was very glad to get back, because then people down in the States have no sense.
Well... That's a pretty broad statement, but...
I'll tell you why I say that, is this. They're in an awful... They get in the car, they're in an awful big hurry to go someplace. When they get there, they get out and ask you, what are we going to do now? And they're in a hurry to do something and nothing to do it in.
Well, there's a lot to be said about that. They're going at a terrific pace, and they don't know exactly where they're going or what they... want to do when they get where they think they want to go.
That's the way I found them.
And so Mr. Bugby gets right back here to Alaska. Now, Mr. Bugby, I wonder if you'd give us some ideas about how you happened to run up against that stuff you're carrying there.
Well, yes. I got this above the Arctic Circle, and I stumbled onto it accidentally.
I am always interested in those accidental gold finds. By the way, did you start gold mining when you first came up here?
No. When I first came here, I worked for the Alaska Railroad. They started, and I worked for them.
I see. Was the Alaska Railroad operating when you came here?
No, they were started afterwards. They started the road between Inchoit and 16.
And you were one of the first employees?
I was one of the first employees.
I'll bet you have an awful low ID card. You know, I don't suppose you remember what your ID card was, do
no,
you?
No, I don't.
Well, that must be way back in the first one or two numbers. Where did you go from there?
I went from there to Fairbanks. I trapped and fished in the summertime. Trapped in the winter, rather.
Was the road built through then, the Alaska Railroad?
Partly.
I see. And how did you get the rest of the way?
Well, dog team.
Oh? Did you have your own dog team?
Oh, yes. And I killed 7 dogs right here in Anchorage in 1917 when I went to the First War.
Oh.
Right back of the hotel where the... I can't think of the name.
You mean the Westward?
No, okay. the side of the...
Anchorage Hotel, down around where the news was, Parsons Hotel?
Parsons Hotel, right there
yes.
On the bank.
Parsons
I
Hotel.
Killed 7 dogs right there and threw them over the bank.
Why did you do that?
Because I wouldn't sell them to nobody else and let them misuse them, because they worked for me and I broke them.
I see. Boy, that must have really taken a lot out of you to kill the dogs that you raised.
It did.
And how long were you out during the war?
3 years, from 17 to 20.
And you, did you go across?
Or? Yes.
Well, then you saw action right there firsthand.
I have no right shoulder.
Is that right? Well, you wouldn't know it. My golly. It, I am amazed. This man here has a battle scar that he has brought with him from the last World War, and evidently it hasn't hampered his efforts in Alaska, because he looks hale and hearty and able to carry that load of gold around with him. By the way, how big is that nugget you're carrying there?
Oh, really don't know exactly.
It's, how much do you think it would be worth? $40, $50?
Yes, I've been offered $90 for it from the jewelry.
Well, that is bigger than I thought. Well, then, getting back to you again, after you come back from the war, where did you go?
I went fishing the first year of 20 at Kodiak.
Oh, what type of fishing was
that? Salmon fishing, netting, purseine them.
Did you run into good luck?
Well, not too good, no. There wasn't no prices then. Of course, a dollar then was worth a dollar. But now they're not.
And you have something there.
And then I went trapping that winter and went back up. And the next spring, I come out of into Fairbanks. And the next, I went trapping that, or fishing that spring, summer of 21, 22. And then I come back trapping, and I, for a long, good many years, all I done was just prospect and trap and fish.
A moment ago, I noticed you looked at a picture of a deer on a magazine out here, and it brought to mind an experience you had with a moose.
Yes.
I'd like to hear that.
Well, that moose was every place but in his right place.
Now, let's start at the beginning. Where did you get a hold of this moose? I understand you made a pet out of him. Is that right?
Most certainly the wolves got its mother. And I took it home and I raised it on canned milk. And it was very expensive at that time to get it in there, because I had to freight it in with a dog team.
Where was this now?
About 300 miles north of Fairbanks.
And you were right out there in the wilderness.
That's right.
How did you get supplies in there?
Freight them in with a dog team.
From Fairbanks?
I've used as high as 27 dogs on my freight team.
You not on one team? Not
yes.
One team of 27 dogs?
I've got pictures
of them.
And I raised this moose, and he was in everything but the right thing. I couldn't keep him out of the house.
I imagine you had to alter your door after a while, didn't you, to get him?
Well, he sure fixed it once or twice. he widened it. I didn't have to widen it. He did.
Well, how long did you keep this moose?
I kept him until about, he was there 3 winters after I raised him, and I don't really know what did become of him.
Oh, you mean he just went off into the wilderness?
Went off and by himself with a bunch of moose or by himself or something.
Well, he probably got the old call of the wild had to go back where he came from.
And I'll never have another pet moose.
Well, that's really quite a good chunk of pet to keep around the house or in the parlor. Well, now, after your experiences in Fairbanks, when you come back from the war, what did you do then? Did you get into the extreme portions of Alaska, up around Nome or Barrow or any of those
Yes.
Things?
I took one trip out of Fairbanks. It lasted for 3 years. I left Fairbanks in the fall after the first snow come, and I wintered that winter on the head of the Notak, that's north of Kotzebue. And I wintered there that winter, and the next winter I wintered on the head of the Colville. And the next winter, I wintered east of the Colville River, the mouth of the Colville in the Arctic, about 100 miles. And the next spring, before the snow left, I pulled back into Fort Yukon. That's the first town I'd seen from the time I left Kotzebue.
I bet it wasn't as easy to winter as you say it is here on this show.
No, it was kind of a little tough, all right, but then we made it.
Were there any times during your experiences up there that you began to wonder whether or not you'd get out alive?
Never thought of it.
Never thought of it?
No, we had too much to do.
That is a man capable of combating the elements to the extent that he never thinks whether or not he's going to get out alive. Well, that's.
And last winter I left home, where I'm trapped at, is halfway between Point Barrow and Fairbanks, and I drove a dog team in November across country into Nome or into Point Barrow. Took me 9 days to make it, and out of house in between. in November.
Did you have to ration your food? No. You saw that you were well supplied.
I always go that way. Don't run short.
Well, I can understand why the man stands here as healthy and as happy as he is going through those experiences. He certainly must think ahead. Well, now, I'd like to know just what kinds of mining you have done. I'm not very well acquainted with mining myself, and maybe somebody'd like to know, too.
Well, in 34, I went broke, practically. I lost a good many, little bit, in a hard rock. And no more hard rocks for me.
What is that? I mean, what type of mining is that?
Gold mining.
Yeah, I know, but the word just hard rock, does that mean that we take the rock and break it up, or... How do you get the gold from this hard rock?
Take the rock and mash it, grind it, pan it, float it, and put her in back in its natural form of the gold. Get the gold out of the rock.
I see, and that's a little different than the digging it out of the ground. You see, now a lot of the people that are listening are probably as new to this process as I am, and we like to hear what it's all about. Oh, are you going to stick with mining?
Well, I expect to go back and to look the creeks over a little bit more next year, if I can.
I wish I were in the mining business. I think I'd hire you to go right along with me. Well, now, Mr. Bugby, our time is running out, as it always does when we get in one of these conversations. And... we'd like to ask you if you're going to spend the rest of your days up here.
Well, I can answer that very shortly. What I've seen of the States, I don't think I want any part of them.
Well, now there's a man who is truly an Alaskan, a man who has come to Alaska and has gone back out again on two different occasions and has decided that this is the end of the road for him. Well, it kind of looks like this is the end of the road for our little program, and we want to say to you, Mr. Bugby, that this has been a very, very interesting conversation, and we thank you again.
And thanks to you.
Here's the Pioneer. It's another presentation of the Pioneer Cab Company, which is located across from the Nordale Hotel, and their telephone number is East 108. Here's the Pioneer brings you an interview with one of Alaska's genuine old-timers. And this week we have one who is widely known throughout the interior of Alaska, the mayor of the city of Fairbanks. His name is Jalmer Nordale. Mr. Nordale, I'm going to begin by asking whether you were born in the territory or in the States.
I was born in the States, Al. I came north at the age of 2 years. I believe it was April of 1896, when I was led up the gangplank at Juneau by Gus Nord, then master of the old Willapaw. Gus Nord later, as nearly every Alaskan knows, became senior master for the Alaska Steam.
I see. Then that makes your time in Alaska 51 years. A genuine old-timer, I should say. Now, Mr. Nordale, how long did your family stay in Juneau?
Mother and I came there to join my father, who had preceded us by 2 or 3 months. We remained there until the winter of 1896, when my father continued to die and over the Chilkoot Pass to Dawson. When Mother and another brother who had been born in Dawson that fall, and I returned to Seattle.
And... wasn't there a time when you weren't so sure that your father was alive? Wasn't he reported missing up in the Dawson country?
Yes, he was, Al. We didn't know for some months whether he was living. Reports were to the effect that he had been lost on the trip in.
Mm-hmm. What year did your mother take you to Dawson?
We went into Dawson in August of 1896. We came over the White Pass as far as construction was completed, and walked some distance into Whitehorse.
I suppose the Dawson at that time was really a rip-roaring and rather primitive gold camp. What was it like?
Well, to a boy, I wouldn't say that it was rip-roaring. Dawson was very well regulated, as you may know.
By the mounted police?
As the old Northwest Mounted Police, which now is known as the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Mm-hmm. And there was very little of the rip-roaring aspect evident on the street.
Not a bit like Hollywood would have us believe, then.
Hardly.
Well, are you particularly remembering any incidents about Dawson in the early days that you'd like to recall at this time?
Well, Al, I think our early incident, our early recollections of Dawson were of a bustling camp. We spent some time on the creeks and naturally came to know the miners very well. Gold, as we have been told in story, was flowing freely and so forth. But we led a normal life throughout the years we were there.
I don't suppose you went to school for very long at Dawson.
We were only in Dawson until the spring of 1901. Till the fall of 1901, when we moved out to the creeks.
I see. And then eventually you moved to Fairbanks. What year was that?
1904.
What sort of a trip would you have at that time from Dawson to Fairbanks?
We had a very interesting trip. We left Dawson on the 3rd of October on what was the last boat of the season. There were 190 souls aboard the Old Monarch, a small river packet, and we were 23 days on the trip. We hit many of the sandbars, and it was necessary to unload and load the barges and the boat, and also to live off the country.
Well, I think you said you came to Fairbanks in 1904, isn't that right?
That's right.
And what was Fairbanks like at that time? I suppose there wasn't very much here then.
Fairbanks in October of 1904 was really a bustling place. There was a great building boom on. It was being converted from a log cabin frontier town to a modern city. It really had all the earmarks of a modern city at that time.
I understand that the population in this locality was not confined so much to Fairbanks as it is now, but it was spread out throughout the mining camps here in the Tanana Valley. Isn't that true?
That is true. We had several communities on the nearby creeks, and we had large resident populations on each of the gold-bearing creeks.
I'm wondering, what were some of the communities that were thriving at that time that are practically extinct right now?
Fox, Gilmore, Fairbanks Creek, Clary City, then at first known as Gates City, through its association with Swiftwater Bill, who was mining just below the town, Chattanooga, and Esther, of course. And then there were several other smaller communities.
Was Chena City or Old Chena in being at that time?
Chena was, and Chena had hopes of being the metropolis of the Tanana Valley. I've sometimes regretted the fact that Fairbanks had not been located at Chena. It had many advantages that Fairbanks lacked in those early days. When we came down from Dawson on this riverboat, we froze in at Chena, and at that time they were projecting the Tanana Valley Mines Railroad into Fairbanks, so we walked up over the right-of-way slashings. The town of Chena had restaurants and hotel accommodations and so forth. It was quite a community.
You seem to infer there that the present location of Fairbanks came about only by an accident. I believe this trader stopped his boat and unloaded his groceries here, didn't he?
That is true, Al. They became established, the miners became established here through the fact that they were patronizing the trader, Captain E.T. Barnett. And one thing led to another. Eventually, the federal court was established here, and that spell the doom of China.
I've visited the old location there of China City, and I agree with you. It's a prettier spot, and it's more accessible by water, and would seem to be a more logical spot for a city, but of course it's too late now.
That is true.
Uh-huh. And will you tell us something of that Toonerville trolley of the early days that ran, I believe, from here to Chattanooga and also out to old China?
It originally was constructed from China to Fairbanks, then was projected to Gilmore, and in the fall of 1906, the rails were continued on to the town of Chattanooga.
And then I suppose it died a natural death when the mining communities out there declined.
It continued in operation until after the Alaska Railroad came into Fairbanks. I believe that a great part of the FE Company construction material was moved over the road. But when this haulage was completed, there was no further economic use for the road.
All right, Mr. Nordale, I'd like to talk about you again for a change. Will you tell us about some of the work that you've done since you've come to Fairbanks?
Well, Al, I've done several things. I've been in photography. I spent some time before the last war as a game warden, and then was in newspaper work, and later in airline accounting.
I see. Well, let's see now. To begin with, I'd like to know about the newspaper work. Was that here with the predecessor of the News Miner, or did it go by that name?
No. I had worked on some of the other papers, the Fairbanks Times, as a printer's devil and so forth. But I came on to news writing with the News Miner, with W.F. Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong font, yes.
Uh-huh. And I'd like to know, too, about the background there on your game warden work. What was that?
The time I spent as a game warden was very interesting. I spent probably a year and a half in game census work and so forth. I had an opportunity to cover virtually all of the interior of Alaska. I traveled in the winter by dog team and in the summer by boat. I believe I was the first warden to go into McKinley Park on a game census shortly after the park was established.
From that, I would judge that you probably are opinionated on the subject of the wolf versus the caribou.
Well, I am positively prejudiced against the wolf, Al.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll take up that subject sometime later. And now, your airline accounting, that might possibly tie in with the early day aviation around here. Did you figure in that?
I came with American Airlines, that is, with Alaskan Airlines, an American Airlines subsidiary, in the spring of 1930, and then when Pan American took over, I continued with them and spent, I believe, 14 years in airline work.
Well, Mr. Nordale, I feel that the people of Fairbanks believe that you are doing a wonderful job as the mayor of our city, and I am sure that you must have some idea as to the future of this vicinity of Alaska and also some of the things that Fairbanks and Interior Alaska need the most. Will you tell us something about that?
Well, Al, that's a rather broad subject. We of the city of Fairbanks have a big task before us. We must realize that this community will continue to grow. I say steadily, but I believe it'll be a very rapid growth in the immediate future years. We will have to shape the town to take care of that growth. We will have to modernize it. And, of course, when I say modernize it, you know what that entails. We will have to get going immediately, and it will be a program that will have to be carried out through the years.
Don't you believe, Mr. Nordale, that the only thing right now that's keeping Fairbanks from mushrooming is the simple lack of materials, also a lack of labor, but chiefly materials?
I believe materials material shortage is hampering us very greatly. There's no doubt about that, Al. And we can't hope for any great relief in housing until materials become available.
Would you mind being a little more specific about some of the things that the community needs? For example, Do you believe that the water system issue will ever become something to be decided upon by the people of Fairbanks again?
Oh, absolutely, Al. The city must have water. If for no other reason than from the sanitation angle. Mm-hmm. We are faced with that, and we must make some provision at a very early date.
And I understand, too, that over at the City Hall you've been pondering the problem of our sewage system, and also there must be a very definite need for improved streets in the community, and offhand I'd say, too, that we need another bridge across the Chena River and a utility system. It really appears to me that the city government has a lot on his hands and plenty to do in the next 10 or 12 years.
I believe that's true, Al. That's evident.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you feel about all your years in the territory of Alaska? 51, I believe we said?
Yes.
Have they been enjoyable years, or do you wish that you'd spent them in New York or Chicago?
No, Al, I believe I've had a real experience in life. I wouldn't trade my station so far as life in the North is concerned. I formed fast friendships, have a great admiration for the old-timers. I was just thinking a moment ago when we were speaking of the early days in the Klondike and in Clary City. I believe that someday there should be a monument erected to a forgotten man. We have monuments to the Stampeder and so forth, but I believe there should be one to the man who followed the Stampeder, the man who went underground and spent his 12 hours a day at the handles of an iron-wheeled wheelbarrow and was paced and was put up with all of the inconveniences of the mole or what have you. They were very admirable men, and when people speak of the roisterous North, I've often thought that, after all, these men worked their 12 hours at a scant wage and so forth, and they were certainly very stable. There was nothing roistering about them. I have all the admiration in the world for the old pioneer, Al, and I know them.
All right, and thank you very much, Mr. Chalmer Nordale. Friends, you've listened to the program Here's a Pioneer, weekly presentation of the Pioneer Cab Company in Fairbanks, located across from the Nordale Hotel on 2nd Avenue in Fairbanks, and their telephone number, 24 hours a day, is East 108. Listen for Here's a Pioneer, another interview with one of Alaska's genuine old-timers, at 7:30 next Wednesday evening.